Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, we all know how expensive it is to live in South Florida, whether you're renting an apartment or you own a home. But a new report from the Miami Urban Future Initiative illustrates just how severe this problem is. A report entitled Miami Affordable Housing Crisis finds that Greater Miami, which includes Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade, is the seventh most expensive metro area to live in the U.S. 60% of folks living here spend more than a third of their income on their rent or on their mortgage. Richard Florida co-authored the report. He's a researcher that's been studying the urban problems facing the region now for more than a decade. And he sat down with Sundial producer Chris Remington for a conversation about the extent of the problem and maybe some solutions.
So, Richard, we all know how expensive it is to live here in South Florida. What surprised me in this report was comparing Miami to New York to LA to these other major cities. We rank up towards the top in terms of inaffordability. As someone that is steeped in this issue, did that data surprise you at all? Did those findings surprise you?
The problem is, you know, we're really a tale of two cities or two regions where we have incredible wealth packed along our coastlines in parts of downtown, like Miami's downtown, and in and around, you know, knowledge institutions, universities, all throughout the region. And then we just have people who are working in, you know, low-wage service jobs, not making enough to make ends meet. And that's the problem with affordability. Even though our housing prices, on balance, are lower than the superstar cities like New York and LA or San Francisco, our median incomes are also way lower. So then we get a real big crisis of affordability. I guess, Chris, I guess what I mean to say is maybe it did surprise me, even to me who knew Miami was unaffordable, the degree to which we are truly unaffordable.
So I want to get into some of the historical context behind it. The region was hit hard by the Great Recession and the housing bubble back in 2008. Why was South Florida particularly vulnerable during the housing crisis?
You know, we started coming here a little over a decade ago, and we rented for a few years because we wanted to test. You know, I say this to anyone, we wanted to test drive it. And I remember when the housing crisis hit, we were still renting and actually got very good deals on rent and then decided, you know, when the thing started to recover to buy. But the reason we were so hard hit is, you know, we were playing games, funny games down here. You know, I think probably everyone remembers that 60 Minutes segment. I watched it. I didn't live here then. And the woman was like, you know, she worked in a manicure salon and she had bought like four houses on shady loans. And of course, we have a lot of money laundering going on in this region. So we had a lot of shady things going on, which is not unusual, right? We know and love Miami, not unusual. So that's what happened, of course. People couldn't afford to buy those homes. They had loans that were subprime. We had a lot of shady things going on. And it really just collapsed like a house of cards. I think what was also surprising, though, is the fact, the degree to which we've rebounded.
No, I wanted to get into that recovery because I saw in the report it's really interesting. From 2014 to 2018, you saw a 50% jump in housing value. And I'm just kind of curious if we have a sense as to what some of the causes are, why we had such a strong rebound in that period of time.
I don't know for sure,
yeah.
But I can speculate. I think that one thing that's happened is I'm a baby boomer. And I think, you know, people like me get tired of living in cold now. I'm kind of a snowbird. I have to go north to work and I have a university teaching position. But many people who are my age are now nearing retirement. So they're like, the hell with that cold weather. And the statistics I've seen from New York are very interesting. There has been a long run secular move of relatively high end, middle class or high net worth New Yorkers, particularly to Southern Florida. But what we've seen is since the tax changes, that has really bumped up again. The tax changes, not only are taxes higher in the state of New York and in New York City, but the tax changes that now disallow you to deduct your state and local taxes. And I think that's in part what's happening, that people from the United States, colder parts of the United States, principally New York, but also Boston. So I think that's what's happening. Foreign buyers to some degree, but I think that's really cooled off. I think it really is Americans driving this.
And so we see this major bump in housing values, but at the same time, wages aren't following in that same path. What are some of the issues in terms of the job market down here that wages aren't following?
Well, that's why we have the affordability crisis. So, you know, what we're seeing in real time is people who derive their income elsewhere, either who are retired and have savings or a home that they could trade, or people who can commute. I mean, this trend of super commuting, it really is becoming bigger. And lots of folks who are moving here from New York, they still commute to work. Dad still commutes to work in New York. I think that's driving it. And then, of course, our job base here is not great. It's getting better. We're building a tech hub. There's no doubt. We're attracting more corporate headquarters and business that want to serve, not only from Latin America, want to serve the Latin and South American market. But, you know, the preponderance of our economy, which was our previous report, in fact, on the inequality and the wage gap from our Miami Urban Future Initiative, that those jobs are in low-wage, low-skill service jobs in hospitality, tourism, retail, and the related. And there are only one other metropolitan economy in the United States is more service-intensive than us, Las Vegas. So because those jobs pay very low, our folks don't have a lot of money, and therein, as housing prices rise, we get this real squeeze.
We see high-rises getting built all over South Florida, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm. You see high-rises right next to the studio here. But as you say in the report, there's already a surplus of expensive condos and apartments. So who are the developers targeting these towards? Who are they hoping are going to buy and rent these?
So there is this myth that there's more rich people who are somehow going to move here. I forget what the number is. It's in the report. But we have like multiple years of supply of high-end condos. And we don't have virtually any supply of the kind of affordable housing people need. And what's so striking in the report, I believe that we have, of any large metro over a million people, there are 53 such metros in the country, we have the largest percenters of renters that are burdened, that are finding the cost burden, which means they're spending over 35%.
Yeah, I'm looking at the report. It's Grand Rapids is right below us, so highest in the country.
So that's what's terrifying to me, that because our incomes are low and because people don't have the money for a down payment, they have to go in the rental market. And then our rental market is such that people are paying extraordinarily high prices relative to income. And I think that's the nature of our housing. That's the real issue in our housing affordability problem. One other thing I may mention, this is not related to the report, but there's a famous sociologist at Princeton called Matt Desmond. Matt wrote a book called Evicted that won a Pulitzer Prize. And he just wrote a new report, a new study in an academic journal. That report was really terrifying. Applied to Miami. This report was for the whole country, but when you apply it to Miami, what he found is that poor people across the United States pay appreciably more for rent. So that if you're poor in the United States and you're a renter, you spend more of your income than anyone else because you're poor. Moreover, what he found, which was truly terrifying, is that guess what? Landlords make a heck of a lot of money off poor people because landlords don't improve the properties. They let them run down. They bought them at a low rate. And what he found that was so daunting and so scary applied to Miami, but it could apply to other cities, but applied to Miami, is that low-income people in the United States are paying the highest share of their income for rent, and landlords are making a whole boatload of money off those folks.
I'm speaking with researcher Richard Florida with the Creative Class Group. He co-authored the new report called Miami's Housing Affordability Crisis. It shows that South Florida is among the most expensive areas to live in the country. So another part of the report I wanted to dive into, the aspect that minority communities are hit the hardest by high housing costs, both for renters and for homeowners. Report says Black and Hispanic homeowners face the steepest cost burdens. So when we look at that data, do we have a sense of how our region compares to other major metropolitan areas when we look at minority communities?
As you said, particularly African Americans here, Latino, Hispanic folks too, but obviously because so many of those Latino and Hispanic folks are recent immigrants who will not have, because of the recentness of their immigration, high incomes. But it doesn't compare well. I mean, we don't compare well on any of these measures. We always, you know, no matter what we look at, whether it's incomes, wages, housing, rent burdens, we're a tale of two cities or a tale of two regions. A small group of ultra-wealthy folks who have a lot of money and a lot of capital and a lot of wealth and can invest. And then a much larger group, not only of service workers, but disproportionately minority, more concentrated among African Americans, but also Hispanic, Latino people struggling at the bottom. And in that sense, I mean, we're a reflection of America, but we tend to be in some of the toughest shape because our housing prices are relatively high and our incomes are terribly low.
But I think the Hispanic Latino population here is specifically interesting because a large portion of that population is part of that high earning class.
Yes.
So I'm curious how you kind of look at the nuance of that data when you think about our region.
One of, I think, the most impressive statistics for the Miami region, again, the metropolitan area, is that when you look at the proportion of either highly educated people, that would be people who have a college degree and more, or graduating college or have an advanced degree or a master's degree or PhD. Or if you look at the percentage of people who are members of what I call the creative class, that's scientists, technologists, business people, knowledge workers, arts and cultural people who make high incomes. Like these people make like 100 grand a year. Only one metropolitan area in the entire United States, the Silicon Valley in the Bay Area of California, has a higher percentage of those folks who are foreign born. So our immigrants are fueling our talent base. They are 40% of our highly educated people and similarly 40% of our knowledge working creative class. So that's a big deal. And, you know, those folks are folks really becoming part of the American dream. So we do have, we do very much have an escalator here. You know, Miami still is one of the places that you can get on an escalator. The problem has been that we have this mismatch in housing.
Let's try and get into some possible solutions, some ideas. There's a push for more affordable places for people to live in South Florida. Some folks are advocating for rent stabilization, but you have economists that argue rental controls can actually make things worse. So I guess I'm wondering from you, do we see solutions on the supply side, the landlords, the developers, or more on the demand side, increasing people's ability to pay their rents?
Well, we're going to need to work on both sides here. And that's why I wanted to add this report to that conversation, because in contrast to many other cities like New York or San Francisco or Boston or Chicago that have longer histories, we tend not to not have these conversations here. For some reason, it's harder, except with you and the newspaper, but we tend to, this is not something that's on people's mind. So the first thing that's going to happen in an environment where as a country we've decided that we don't want a federal government, rightly or wrongly, what's happening in cities around the country and is starting to happen here is people point at Amazon and say, okay, you want to build your headquarters? You got to make more affordable housing and give us better wages. Or in Miami's case, they start to point at the real estate community. They look at those beautiful big condo towers and people making a killing. This is what's happening in New York City. And they're saying to the developers, you've got to pay. If you want to have more density or more height, you want to build a taller tower, you're going to have to devote 20 or 25% of the units in that building for affordable housing. And that's happening all across New York City. Look, rent control will be a reality. For a politician who's confronted with this, constituents who are angry, what's the easiest lever to pull? Rent control. Let's stabilize the rent. Now, we know, economists have shown that that's probably the worst policy you could implement, because what it does is cause the landlord to say, the heck with this, I'm not going to put a penny in it. Let it run down to the dirt. What's the better policy is to have a government private sector effort to do two things and use the right words. One, to make sure we're building not just more housing, but we're building affordable housing. So maybe it's a split. We're going to build 20 or 25% of the new units are going to be dedicated affordable. And that can work. Economists think housing vouchers can work. They're very effective. Also, the idea of a universal basic income, which is becoming much more part of the conversation and will be much more part of the conversation.
The thing I was wondering, though, is there a potential for this to be solved through the free market? As you see a lot of these expensive housing going unfilled, could developers start to see value in building more affordable housing units and stuff folks can actually buy?
Well, I think it happened in a way with the crisis, you know. One of the things we know is that the liveliness we see in downtown Miami, now it's not throughout the region, was the fact that we built a lot of condos in downtown Miami and Brickell. They couldn't be sold, so they started to rent them to young people. And, you know, when you go down there now and you see the energy in that community and you still see lots of young people, especially young people moving here from other places because we're not as expensive as New York or LA or San Francisco, they're renting apartments in that area. Yeah, we can do more. We can build studios. We can carve up units. We can begin to see older homes and make a push to renovate them and make them affordable, you know. But, you know, in California now, we're seeing a whole raft of tech startups. I talked to reporters at the San Francisco Chronicle about this that are basically home sharing. So basically what they're doing is a company is buying up these older homes and basically having a family room and a group home. Now, most of those people tend to be the younger millennial type, but you could imagine something like that occurring. But look, I think in America, we've got to recalibrate. This whole idea of the old 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 square foot McMansion in the suburbs no longer has appeal. People want to live closer to where they work. They want to have more time to spend with their family. We're realizing we don't need as much space. So we've got to create, you know, workforce housing. You know, we need to build housing for our workforce that can't afford to live here, our teachers, our emergency personnel, our firefighters, our police, our service personnel. you know, that's something, because our economy is so dependent on that. That's something that could pick up steam here.
I've been speaking with researcher Richard Florida with the Creative Class Group. He's behind the new report called Miami's Housing Affordability Crisis. Mr. Florida, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thanks so much. It's always a pleasure being with you.
And Richard Florida was speaking with our Sundial producer, Chris Remington. By the way, that report entitled Miami's Affordable Housing Crisis is available on our social media, WLRN Sundial.